Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Matty B. And Matt, I wanted to start off the show congratulating you on Florida State's big win. They're finally bowl eligible. I know in recent years it's been tough for them to get that bowl eligibility, so it's good to see that they're able to knock that out. Not as fast as a team like Michigan or Georgia, but it's still a pretty good end to the season for them to be bowl eligible. What do you think on that?
Hey, bowl eligible, playoff eligible. We're just riding the highs.
Because I wanted to start off by saying just thank you to Notre Dame and Pitt, two teams that typically I really wouldn't care to thank. But Pitt knocked Louisville out and right the week after we've laid out all these scenarios where maybe the ACC could get three teams in, undefeated at the end of the year, going into the championship week and potentially setting up two ACC teams in the playoffs. Pitt was like, nah, we're not having that. And Notre Dame, Louisville just beat them. And they were like, we're not going to let the Pac-12 have that luxury either. Let's just go ahead and knock USC down now. And the way with the round robin or whatever they're doing now, I think that they're going to have to play like Oregon and Washington. So that guarantees that I think someone in the Pac-12 will either be, I guess Washington would be the undefeated team, or their champ would have one or two losses now. Because that's been the issue, right, with these teams that come in. And they go through their schedule, and you're like, well, the Pac-12 seems really strong this year. But if they just beat each other up and they lose a key non-conference game like to Notre Dame, which very well could have happened to Ohio State if they put 11 men on the field, right, Notre Dame, and they stopped them at the end of that game, then the Big Ten would have been in the same issue where a Notre Dame knocks them out of the playoff contention, which then hurts the conference, where if they were to win the conference with one or two losses. Because like the Big Ten, I keep talking about, they could have a three-way tie. If Ohio State would have been the one to get the nod for the Big Ten championship and they had two losses because of the Notre Dame loss, that's bad optics. No two-loss team has ever made the playoff. Same with like Alabama. If they'd lose to Tennessee this week and they run the table, do they put a two-loss Bama in with losses to Texas and Tennessee? Or do they put a one-loss Georgia in over them that they just lost to, right? I don't know. We haven't really had that kind of shake out, but with upsets like this happening, that could be the case. The big game this week, you have Penn State and Ohio State playing. That's going to be, it's at Ohio State, and that's why I think that there's going to be a chance for a round robin, like three-way win. For that to happen, Ohio State will beat Penn State. Michigan could lose to Penn State on the road, and then Michigan gets Ohio State at home, and it could work out with all three teams having one loss. And after like USC going down and Louisville going down, it seems like that's the only conference that could really happen to. I mean, you would have the ACC where Florida State's undefeated and UNC could possibly be undefeated. You would think that they're going to play each other and knock one of them out, right? But in the Big Ten, they're not going to play the other champion. They're going to play the West champion, which looks like Iowa. Did you watch that Iowa game?
No.
What in the world, Wisconsin? You come in, you talk about Luke Fickell. He wants to score more. They're running the air raid, and their offense looks worse than Iowa's. They can't do anything, and they let Iowa just squeeze them to death. And Iowa can't do anything on offense. So, like, just don't turn the ball over against Iowa. And then eventually you'll like, just finally break through, and their defense can't be on the field the entire game. Wisconsin's like, nah, we're going to let you hang around and just beat us with a weird score. And Wisconsin was at home, too. And it's looking like now, Iowa, I know they lost to Penn State, but they have the tiebreaker over Wisconsin now. If that were to happen, it would be the Hawkeyes going to the Big Ten championship. And they put up Iowa's remaining schedule, and it's so weak that I thought it would take a pure Brian Ferentz display of scoring like 10 points to even choke with that schedule. Because, like, as Ohio State destroyed Purdue, showing that like even teams in the Big Ten West that used to be kind of competitive, Purdue got killed by Ohio State. Nebraska was like killed by Michigan, showing that there's a gigantic gap there. So like to have Iowa say like, well, they could be on upset alert. I'm like, could they? Like, could they? Because like they're not playing teams tough. Like Jeff Brohm left to go to Louisville. Purdue, it looks like they're out of sorts. Northwestern's going through like their issues. And then Nebraska's like, they need basically a complete rebuild. And Matt Rhule seemed like they didn't really start that yet. With the transfer portal, you should have did that. Although then you get a bunch of undisciplined teams like our players like Colorado has right now. Which I don't know how they blow that game to Stanford. I don't know if you caught that on Friday night.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
I went to bed.
I mean, I saw it after the fact, but that's crazy.
So they were up, I think it was like the third biggest comeback win of all time. Maybe it was in the Pac-12 or maybe it was in all college football. I don't know. It was like 20-something points. But I went to bed thinking, oh, Colorado's back on track. Travis Hunter's back. He had like 2 touchdowns and over 100 yards receiving. I thought, man, that's going to be his Heisman what if. Like, what if he doesn't get a lacerated liver, which is a crazy injury anyway, and comes back, great story, and they blow it. And it has to be on coaching, because there was another game I was watching. I can't remember which game it was, and it was the same type of thing. Oh, it might have been the Michigan State one, where they were up big. I think I caught the end of it. They were up big on, like, what was it, Rutgers? And then it was like, well, this offense isn't really good at running the clock out. So there's a good chance for like them to come back and make this comeback a reality. It's like, what are you talking about? There's not a good chance of them running the clock out? Then make some adjustments. Like, if your team's identity is, hey, let's let them come back and win, beat the game in the fourth quarter by scoring 20 points unanswered, you have an issue. Like, I don't know who, like, what's the coaching? Because I was thinking about it with, like, even the Washington game was kind of the same way. They score in 2 plays and let Oregon have a chance. If their guy doesn't shank the field goal, they go to overtime. But it's like, even Rich Rod's offense, like, you got to have quick-hitting passes to kind of take the place of run plays. Right? If you're going to have that type of offense, Mike Leach, have your passes be the run plays where you run the clock out. You don't have to run up to the line of scrimmage and snap the ball immediately. There's no rule that says you have to do that every play. And like, does slowing you down really get you that out of rhythm? Then I think it has to be a coaching thing.
I just think it's one of those, it's hard to when you're in that up-tempo mindset, it's tough to shut it off. It's much easier to just, if you're like Jimbo Fisher is notorious for running a slow offense. If you're consistently just getting in the huddle, getting the play, getting to the line, like, it's much easier to, compared to like Chip Kelly, that was like when he was at Oregon, just mow and clock. Like, when you have that system and you're going, it's much easier to do that than to go 1 or 2 plays, hurry up, and then you're backing off and you're going slower. Like,
well, that's what, so the new offensive clock is like cracking me up, because like Michigan played Indiana and their offense comes out and everyone was like, they're starting so slow. What's going on? It wasn't that slow of a start. It was raining. And the first drive, it was a 3-and-out because the guy dropped the pass to pretty much would have got them a first down. And then the next drive, like something happened. And next thing I knew, it was the second quarter. And Indiana had broke a deep play and got a touchdown. And I was like, they only had 2 possessions in that first quarter? What the hell? And people were like, Michigan got to speed it up. Like, what are they doing? They're never going to score that many points. And then next thing you know, they kept running that slow offense and they ended up scoring like 52 points or something. And I thought, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, you don't have to score immediately. Indiana, once they started to, like, I mean, they threw some picks and stuff. They kind of gave Michigan a couple short fields that they were able to work with. But it's like the clock rules are the clock rules. I saw someone put up that with the bigger push for some newer coaches coming, like now more coaches push for the higher tempo, even with the running clock, the plays per game are about the same. across the board. Some teams like Michigan, they're hitting like 10 less plays a game, but that's because they're not trying to go up tempo to offset the rolls. Where other teams, they're throwing more, which stops the clock, and they're trying to push the tempo a little bit more, and so it's balancing out with like the slow. I'm sure Texas A&M has the same issue as Michigan. But I'm always thinking like, all right, who cares? Just win the game. Like, it's insane with the new clock rules. Like, this is the first time Michigan has beat two Big Ten teams by like scoring 50 points since like the 70s. And it's like, it's not, I'm tired of hearing about the NIL excuse. Cause like Indiana, they put out their press release or whatever they talked about during the game. It was like, it's tough for us to compete with NIL schools. It's like, no, dog, you're collecting the Big Ten paycheck, right? What are you talking about? What are you doing with that $80 million a year? You could literally put $10 million of that into a player pool instead of buying new facilities for who? No one goes to your games. Like, I'm really curious on what they're spending the money on. Right? It's not like they have a 100,000 stadium where they have to do, like, upkeep and stuff. Like, their stadium's half empty, so that stuff's probably new, barely used, right? Where's the money? Like, it's very easy. If you have no fans and you have to invest it in something, like, they're obviously investing it in basketball, but yet they're too cowardice to say it. Oh, yeah, we'd rather invest it in basketball. Instead, they're still crying like, well, we don't have the football boosters to do NIL. It's like, you're getting the Big Ten money. Gonzaga's competing with like 5% of that money in their basketball program, and they're better than Indiana. Gonzaga as a program has been better than Indiana since like the 2000s, right? Take the rest of the money and invest it in NIL to pay players. Because there's a thing, I saw someone did an article like interviewing some of the teams about the locker room. And they said that like the Michigan approach of spreading out the NIL for like the entire team and like focusing on like upperclassmen and people that are there for longer has teams that are doing that seem to have better team chemistry. And I was thinking like, yeah, no shit. Right. Like if everyone's like work, you're getting paid for actually like working hard and not just getting paid for showing up. Like some of the freshmen coming in, they're like, oh, you get 100,000. Meanwhile, this other dude's there for 4 years working, is busting his ass. And they're like, oh yeah, you dog, you're doing nothing. Like, you're on the sideline. Like, this other guy's, he's going to be in all the car commercials. Like, he hasn't played a snap, though. He might never play a snap. Like, when Quinn Ewers was at Ohio State, that's like the biggest joke. I always laugh at that commercial where he throws the keys back to the dealership because he did nothing at Ohio State. And yet, Ohio State boosters gladly paid him. He went to Texas and he beat Alabama. Highlight of his career, right? It's like insane. I don't understand it. Like schools like Northwestern and Indiana, like Northwestern's focusing on building a stadium that's smaller. Awesome, guys. Great work. How about you just pay some of your athletes with that money? Like start a Northwestern fund because you're obviously getting donations anyway. Like, why don't you just say, hey, the NIL stuff, and maybe they're afraid of the NCAA, but at this point, I just don't get it. I don't get why the Big Ten just can't out money some of these smaller schools and just put the boots to the neck, right? Like Cincinnati going to the Big 12, they lost Luke Fickell. They've been looking like trash in the Big 12. They're not going to do anything to Ohio State, even though they're in a perceived better conference. But like, there's no reason that Cincinnati should be taking players away from Indiana or Northwestern. Zero reason for them to do that. And that's unfortunately what's been happening. A lot of the Big 12 schools are focused on football. And the Big 10 schools, even with the new money coming in, like they're going to be in for a rude awakening. Because we've seen with Washington, Oregon, and USC's new focus on football, they're coming in and replacing the crap that used to be the Big 10 West. I was thinking about it during that Iowa game. I thought, man, I really wish they would have kept the East-West divisions. Because now it would have been at least having one competitive team in the West, or at least one big brand team most likely to win the West that could compete like Oregon or Washington or USC. And if Wisconsin or Iowa want to step up and win it that year, awesome. Like, it's only going to make the West seem that much better. Now they're doing it. It's like, there's no chance for some of these West schools, like Minnesota. Like, it was embarrassing hearing the stats of the Michigan game last week. Cause I didn't even imagine, like, I didn't even think that Minnesota hadn't beat Michigan since like the '70s or eighties. Like, that's Indiana numbers, buddy. What are you doing? We play for a trophy. Like, come on, get your act together. I don't know. So I'm starting to show off college football heavy. That's my take. On some of these schools with like the conference realignments, like even the Washington States and the Oregon States, be careful what you wish for. You don't want the Big Ten to throw you in because you haven't won the conference, the Pac-12, like ever. I looked up the numbers. Like, Washington State hasn't won it since like maybe 2002 or something. So it's like, okay, maybe, I don't even know. Oregon State was like even earlier than that. If you haven't won it in 20 years, guys, you're not going to win the Big Ten. You're not going to win it ever. You're not going to win it ever. Like, you can't even beat, like, USC was kind of good. Utah comes in and wins the Pac-12. That should be a wake-up call to those other schools. Utah's been focused on football since they had Urban Meyer, which I did see some comments about Michigan State. They still think they can get Urban Meyer, Matt, because they have one intangible, their bar scene. Is top notch. And they think they can lure him in by using some of the campus facilities. So there's still hope there for him. And to me, like I said, that would be the biggest joke of like the Michigan rivalries. Like, yeah, of course, they're going to have, not only does Ohio State hate us so bad that they're going to bring the one guy that talks about bad on Michigan every Fox broadcast, him and Matt Leinart for some reason. I'm glad they got rid of Reggie Bush because he hated Michigan too. You could tell when he talked about him. But they were like trying to do an apology about like Michigan blowing out Nebraska and now Minnesota. And then, of course, this is before the Indiana game. But James Franklin came out. I don't know if you saw his walk back. So in his press conference, he had talked about, I think we might have mentioned it last week, where he talked about Big Ten schools buying out big games. And he basically meant Michigan. So then he said, oh, no, I meant Indiana. Like, anyone's believing that Indiana's buying out of big-time games to make the playoffs, which was his comment, right? Hey, I'm worried about some Big Ten teams playing weak schedules to look better for the playoff committee. Yeah, I meant Indiana. Oh, really? I forgot all the playoff appearances Indiana's made.
You mean like playing UMass and smoking them by 60?
Well, that's what people said. They were like, what are you talking about? Like, Michigan, and I was wrong. I said they bought out Washington. They bought out UCLA. That was the team that's coming in and that they were supposed to play this year. They're still playing Texas next year. I think they actually had one scheduled where it was like Washington and Texas. And I think they bought out Washington. But then Washington got added back anyway. And yeah, you only really want to play when the Big Ten went to a 9-game schedule. Of course, they're going to buy out the Washington game. You're not going to play two ranked opponents and then a 9-game Big Ten schedule. Like, are you insane? Why would you do that? I brought it up at the earlier. Like, Alabama has to be kicking themselves playing Texas if they win the SEC with two losses. If they lose,
but I honestly don't think that that's a terrible thing.
Well, with the 12 games. Playoff, it's going to be great because I think more teams will do it. But as it stands right now, they brought it on themselves. ESPN did with all the SEC hype.
But I think, like, when you're looking at some of these schedules, like, I think if you play, like, for, and I'll use Florida State, take the Florida game and take the LSU game that they have on the schedule this year out and put in two FCS schools in their place. If at the end of the year they have one or two conference losses, and then say it's to ranked UNC, or if Miami climbs back in, or they happen to lose to them, if that was a scenario where you're losing to a ranked team and you have one loss, I don't think you're getting in with that. Compared to take that same one loss, but have that tougher non-conference schedule. I think maybe you have somewhat of a rationale that you can put forward on, because that's how the SEC's always backed in where they say, well, their conference slate's just so much more competitive, there's nothing that can be done.
Well, that's why I brought them up in ESPN, because that's the reason why Michigan plays a 9-game conference schedule. Like, you brought up Florida State. They still play, like, North Alabama and, like, Jacksonville or whatever state. So, basically, the Florida is their 9th game. The non-conference would have been LSU. So, if they would have dropped LSU and brought in another cupcake, would it have mattered if they lost? Like, LSU, for the same reason, they don't have a crossover game, right? So, Florida State was technically their 9th conference game. Their other games are, is it Grambling? Let's see who else, if I can even know these teams. Army and Georgia State. So they're not playing power schools. Like, you can count Army. I know Michigan did a few years ago, and I was, like, laughing at it, and then Michigan almost lost to them, remember?
Well, I think with any of those service academies, those are trap games.
Yeah, I don't know why you would schedule that anyway.
Because they have to fill the schedule out, so you got to take your turn.
But that's the thing that annoys me, is like LSU can use the same thing that Florida State's saying. Well, we played Florida State in the non-conference, so like that makes our schedule tougher. Like, no, that was your 9th Power 5 game. Like, non-conference is an extra game. You don't have it. You counting Army? Because like Florida State has Florida. And I think Florida State would come in as a harder non-conference schedule, right? Like, I'm not denying with the way Michigan's schedule fell, not playing UCLA this year, that their schedule's weak. But it's also funny to me that, like, UNLV is beating Vanderbilt or whatever, whoever they beat. And then Georgia's playing close with them. And it's like, well, is UNLV actually that bad? And, like, what was it, Bowling Green? I said last week, beat Georgia Tech, that beat Miami. It's like, yeah, if you can play the schools, they might not be Power 5, but then the other conferences can't lose to that school. Like, you can't say, well, Michigan's playing nobodies, but then that school's beating a Georgia Tech or someone, or a Vanderbilt. Like, okay, it's not like Michigan's scheduling the bottom of the barrel from those other conferences. Yeah, would I have liked to see them play another Power 5? It should be Notre Dame, let's be honest. But Notre Dame's schedule's now, let's fill it with ACC cupcakes. And let's try to be like a Florida State light, which always cracks me up. And I'm glad that they ended up losing 2 games. Like, thank God Louisville stepped up and beat Notre Dame. Because otherwise, we're going to have to hear about Notre Dame backing into the playoffs the entire year. Now I think they're safely done, even though they beat USC, right? 2 lost Notre Dame, I don't think should get in. Because the one team that they would have to jump is going to be Ohio State. And worst case scenario for Ohio State is 2 losses if they lose to both Penn State and Michigan. And Ohio State's not going to get jumped by Notre Dame, even if that happens. So that should effectively keep them out. But I don't know. The reason I brought it up is baseball. So the new bye schedule, right, is awful. I was kind of confused by it because, like, I knew they were doing it. And I tried to, like, crunch some numbers. And I actually saw a Dodgers writer, some of the LA writers were saying how the new 5-game series play-in is bad for baseball because it's getting all the top teams eliminated. Braves go down, Dodgers go down. I think the only top team was number two, and that was Houston, the Astros, that went through. The other teams in are like 5, 6, and whatever. And I looked into it, and it's been happening. And it makes perfect sense if you know baseball. You're taking guys that are used to playing every single day, right? Teams with power bats like Atlanta and the Dodgers. And you're telling them, hey, you guys got to take a week off. And it's good for you. It's good for the pitchers. But there's no way it's good for the bats. And they had stats. I don't know what I should have brought up the article to show on the video. But they had stats where it was saying, like, the bat drop-off from teams that have to rest an entire week, because not only is it a week, they're adding in extra travel days for these wildcard teams. And it's like, why? They don't have travel days during the season. They barely get days off. So I agree with the premise of trying to make the play-in game like a little bit better. Or were they 3-game series or something? I don't even know, but a lot of them were sweeps. But it basically gave the Braves like an entire week off. And I think the Dodgers were like the same. Philly came in. their hitters basically had batting practice against a live pitcher twice, and then they came in and their bats were hot the entire series. And nothing Atlanta could do could match it, because till Atlanta's bats heated up, the series was over. And I agree with them. I don't know what they could do to fix it, and it reminded me of what I've been thinking for the college football playoffs. I think the big teams are going to regret not making it 16 and giving their teams byes. I think Notre Dame knows, and that's why they were happy to accept not having a bye, because, like, let's be honest, Michigan, Ohio State, almost never lose at home, right? Most of their losses are on the road. That's why I'm scared of, like, Michigan losing to Penn State, because they're playing at Penn State. If Penn State beats Ohio State this year, I don't care how bad Ohio State has looked, I'm going to be shocked. Because Penn State has only beat Ohio State in their stadium like once in the past 20 years, and same with like Michigan. So it's tough to win on the road. And giving up a home game in the playoffs to play a neutral site game that's not going to be by your stadium, especially if you're in the Big Ten country, they're not playing the playoff games at the neutral sites that are actually neutral. Like Michigan played TCU, I think, in Arizona last year. Hardly neutral. Right? You have to travel time zones to get over there, closer to TCU, like obviously a disadvantage. I think it should be like the NCAA basketball tournament where whoever the higher seed is, they get to pick the venue. Keep the bowl name game, like whatever going, keep it the Citrus Bowl, Orange Bowl, whatever, but put it by the team that actually deserves it. Because I think that they're going to be regretting, like if Alabama wins the SEC and they get a bye against a team like USC in the Rose Bowl, that is basically a home game for them after they just played a warm-up game against somebody, some nobody at home, they're going to have an advantage going into that game. I guarantee it. So just like baseball's going through it where all their top teams are losing, I'm not saying all the top college teams are going to lose, but they're going to come out looking like crap. We see bowl teams all the time in like these big BCS bowl games where a lot of them are blowouts, and all the talking heads are like, how do we fix it? It's like, don't give them a month off. Like, you're taking players that just won their conference or whatever. They're going to be hanging out thinking like, well, we don't have to really work that hard that much. Some teams are going to stick together and work hard, and then they're going to kick the shit out of the other ones. And actually, with the new schedule, teams are going to be playing a game. And even the teams that have a bye week, like, you're getting an extra week. You're not really getting an extra week of planning. Because if you have two teams that are vastly different, say Michigan's offense playing USC in the opening round, if you're Georgia, like, you're not going to be able to put in practice time to actually really get ahead until you know who wins. Just because of how different both teams are. You can give like a walkthrough a couple practices and say like, all right, here's our plan if so-and-so wins, here's our plan if the other team wins. But that extra week of practice isn't really going to help you. It's not like a bye week during the season where you're like, Penn State's playing UMass. They probably spent zero time working on plan just for UMass. They've been planning for the Ohio State game the entire week.
You think?
That's why Franklin was talking about, he was calling out Michigan because he knows he gets them at home. And he's like, I'm not going to talk any trash on Ohio State. I'm going to be complimentary of them. I'm going to call out Michigan, which will get Ohio State on our side, because they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know what? Maybe we do like Penn State calling out Michigan, right? Playing a little mind game with them. Because, like, that's basically what he did. He took all the pressure off Penn State because now he has all these Michigan guys, like, mad at Penn State. And now the pressure from Ohio State is off because you brought Michigan into the fight for no reason. And then his coy little, oh, I meant Indiana. Yeah, he meant Indiana. Good one.
Well, did you hear the comments at Franklin's press conference?
No, what were they?
One of the reporters asked him about just throwing up the jump balls. It was like, are those designed to just tell the quarterbacks to just throw it up there? He like flipped out about it. It was like, when you watch the film, like, there's a lot of times, and we've joked about it over the last couple of years, where they've won big games, and it doesn't look like it's something that they're drawing up. It's like, well, it's 3rd and 15. Let's just send them deep and chuck it up there and see what happens. They throw the punt up in the air, and their receivers come down with it.
Well, that's exactly what they planned to do. They say, like, well, we got single coverage or even double coverage. Sometimes they're just like, just throw it and give our guy a chance. And honestly, it works out. I mean, like, that was the Rose Bowl or even the Wisconsin game where they were down. And Wisconsin, all they had to do was put some men over the top. Like, they're not throwing those jump balls down the middle of the field, right? Give them some help on the outside. And then you win the Big Ten championship. That's why I think the West has never beat, like, the East team in forever. So, like, even if they were to win, like, that would be the wild card this year. If, like, Penn State finally gets through and they're picked to go to the Big Ten championship and they lose to Wisconsin or someone, Iowa, on a rematch, and then they get skipped again for the playoffs. That's the most James Franklin thing to happen, right? It's like, especially if they picked Ohio State over Penn State again, because that's what happened last time Penn State won the Big Ten. They're like, guys, thank you for your service, but you're not going in the playoffs. All you're doing is throwing jump balls. We saw the game. And then they went and did the same thing in the Rose Bowl, which made it entertaining. I think they lost, right? I can't remember. That was the Sam Darnold year, I think. Before he was seeing ghosts out there, he was actually beating Penn State in the Rose Bowl. Now it's like, I don't know from like his standpoint, but that has to be a coaching thing, right? Because all his offensive coordinators do it. Like, that has to be James Franklin's thing of, like, I'm going to try to get the ball my best players. Just like every coordinator in Michigan has their power run first. And everyone's like, oh, really? You think Harbaugh's not calling these plays? Like, yeah, he is. Are you serious? They all look the exact same. Go back and watch 40. go on, like, the NFL and watch the 49ers, like, 15-minute offense clips or whatever. You know they do that. And then you could watch that. Turn the color off on your TV. And pretend, like, don't look at the helmets. And you could guess if that's a Michigan game or a 49ers game. Like, if I could black out the helmets so you don't know, and the jerseys, and you watch the offenses and you try to guess, and you know it's Harbaugh. You know it's him. That's like the same thing with the Ravens. Like, why aren't they really actually spreading the ball around? It's like, yeah, because the Harbaugh is their coach. They run the same crap. I see, like, the Ravens struggling, like, when they're playing the Steelers, and I'm like, that's a Jim Harbaugh play right there. I actually think it's funny, though, that Minnesota, they hired, like, that hot analytics coach or whatever that was supposed to be better. And now their team looks like crap. I think they won today, though. But other than that, I'm like, get out of here. You could have had Harbaugh. He's won everywhere he's gone. I don't know why an NFL team would pass that up. It's like, do you want to win? They're like, no, not really. All right, then. Hire this other guy. But that's my fear, is that the Big Ten... And I'm focused on the Big Ten, right? Everyone knows that. But I think the Big Ten needs to flex their muscle a bit and get neutral site bowl games. Don't play these bullshit bowl games where everything's in the South. Because, like, you very well could get a Big Ten team playing, like, Florida State after having a bye, and Florida State just warmed up beating some patsy, right? And then they're getting, like, almost a pseudo home game. Like, yeah, it'd be funny if that happened to Ohio State, right? But I don't want that to happen to Michigan. So I got to get ahead of it now and say that this is an awful idea. And it doesn't only hurt the Big Ten. It hurts the SEC because some of those bowl games are out west. And what if it's the Rose Bowl's turn and you're taking Georgia and they're flying out there to play Oregon? Not a good, I'm telling you. You don't want your team to have a month off and then have to travel three time zones against a team that hasn't had a month off. It's not going to be fun. And I know, like, baseball, even the funnier thing with baseball is there's not even a chance of as many injuries as there is in football. Like, it makes sense to give the guys more time off in football because of injuries. In baseball, you don't have to have those days off. Why? There's zero chance for you to do that. Like, why do you have to have those days off? They should never have an entire week off. And maybe they're trying to, like, spread it around so that the Dodgers aren't in, like, the championship game every year. If that's their plan, then it's working. Right? But, like, the Braves won the division, like, six times in a row. And even back in, like, the 90s when they were choking in the playoffs, they were choking in, like, the championship series, right? Like, now they're not even making it there because they're coming in cold. You're almost better to build your team just for pitching. And say, like, if we hit the ball, who cares? Football is going to be the same thing. I don't know what kind of offense translates to a month off. But We're going to find out.
I don't think there's anything that translates with a month off.
We're going to find out next year, right? We're going to find out. Because, like, next year's a year where Penn State's favored to win the conference, right? I think they have the most coming back. I know it's still early. They can win it this year, for all I know. But Michigan had the most coming back this year. And Ohio State was a wild card with an unknown quarterback. Next year's Penn State's year. And it would be funny if they win it, win the Big Ten, and then both Michigan and Ohio State make wild cards, and then they make it farther than Penn State because Penn State gets shoved into some weird, like, non-like bowl where it's like, oh, yeah, you got to go out west and play. I guess the Oregon and USC will be in the Big Ten. So it'd be like, nah, you got to go south and play Florida State. That's what it's going to be. Penn State will lose. And they'll watch their other friends move on to the playoffs, and they'll say, damn it. Damn it, that should have been us. So, but Penn State won't make a big, stink out of it. What do you think about the game this week? You think Penn State can pull it off?
I mean, I definitely think it's plausible for them to pull it off. I think there's plays that watching Ohio State over the weekend that they weren't really able to really go for the jugular like you've seen them go for in the past. It's like they had a turnover in the end zone. They weren't really capitalizing on some opportunities, had like a bunch of drop passes. I mean, you do that in a big game. I mean, it's really easy to let one get away from you.
Well, that's where I think just because it's at home, it is a nooner. The Big Ten noon game makes a difference. That's the one thing that I will say. Like, Michigan's going to Penn State. They're playing at noon, not at night. And traditionally, they've done better at Penn State during the day. Because, like, the crowd's not as loud. It's, like, there's drab and dreary there. So, like, there's not really that much excitement during the day at Penn State day games. I've been to a few, right? People are just like, what am I doing here with my life? Why did I climb this erector set? It's so cold and windy here. And then at Ohio State, like, they're going to go there. And is there going to be a difference? We will see. My other Big Ten game is, like, Michigan going to Michigan State. That's been giving Michigan trouble recently. But Michigan State, like, they just fell apart. Now I don't know what to think going into the game. My big worry is that Michigan's guys haven't been playing the entire game at all. Like, by last year, they had some close games. Like, even Indiana and Rutgers, like, Michigan was in, like, a one-score game with them, like, 2 years ago. Now, the game's, like, a murder. And their backups are in the third quarter. It's, like, weird. They had a stat where Michigan didn't have any defensive players play more than 30 snaps last game. They're rotating everybody to build depth and to keep players fresh for late in the year. Will that pay off? Maybe, right? You have like 100 guys playing every week. You would think that would help with depth and people knowing assignments.
No, I mean, that's 100% to their advantage. If you're running that many guys in, it's definitely a benefit to you.
Because Michigan's back quarterback is Indiana's old quarterback, Jack Tuttle. It's like he comes in and he looked good. And I was thinking, like, I didn't really notice even a drop-off with the offense because they're doing the same thing. They're running first, a lot of play-action type stuff, and he's hitting the guys that are open. And it's like they're scoring touchdowns with their backups. I think the backups had like 14 points. I was like, they did better than first quarter Michigan, right? So I don't even know what to think like going forward. My only concern is like some of these guys, like if we have to lean on him for a four quarter game, is he going to be tired? Like some guys have to get tired because they're just not used to playing a full game, right?
Yeah.
That's my concern with them going forward. Where Penn State, they've seemed to be keeping their guys in for most of the year. Even during their blowouts, it's like opposite approaches. I think they're cycling guys in, but like not as much as like what Michigan's doing. Even like Georgia, like they can't cycle guys in when you're in the game with Vanderbilt. So like, how are you going to get your backups in? Plus, didn't Bowers get hurt?
Yeah.
I don't know if they did like an MRI or whatever, but that was their, that's their standout thing. That's the one thing that I know the Big Ten has like Marvin Harrison Jr., but I really don't think that the Big Ten has like any other standout guys. And Marvin Harrison Jr. has like, he's probably going to be the number one wide receiver taken, but he's not breaking games by himself. I'll say the same thing for Blake Corum. Like Corum is great, probably the best running back in the Big Ten, maybe the country, but he's not able to break the game by himself this year for whatever reason. Seems like he lost a step with that injury where he's making like 15 yard runs, like awesome, but he's not breaking them for touchdowns like he did last year. And Marvin Harrison's kind of the same. Maybe it's the quarterbacking thing, but there's like no electrifying player, I don't think. Penn State doesn't really have one either, where like the one year they had Saquon Barkley, where it was like, this guy is going to win them some games. I don't think any of the Big Ten teams have that guy. Georgia either. Their guy was Bowers. He went down. So that's the one weird thing with a couple of the teams that are ranked really high, where I think with Coleman at Florida State, he seems to be that guy. But I don't know.
I mean, I thought, I was curious to see with Johnny Wilson out how, what the offense was going to look like, because the last couple weeks it's just been the chuck it up deep down the sideline fade balls.
And the James Franklin offense he just complained about.
Yes, and it drives me absolutely insane. But I felt like with him being out, there was more balance. I mean, the one thing that I would like to see more, and I know it's probably more so on him actually doing it, is I'd like to see Jordan Travis just pull some of these design runs where there's so much pursuit from the backside that it's like he had two touchdown runs on Saturday, and it's like he pulls the ball and there's literally nobody around him. It's like if he would do that in other parts of the field too and not just on the goal line, it's there. The opportunities are there for some really big plays. And I think it gets them out of these situations where it's like second and eight, second and 12, where they're taking, you know, just take what they're giving you.
Well, do you think the coaches are telling him not to pull?
I mean, it's plausible that they're saying to hand off, but I feel like the way that that's their scheme is designed, there's a lot of built-in stuff for run options off of it. And I don't know he's just worried about injury and not pulling it. Like it's easier just to give.
Well, the big brain Michigan fans have the same argument with themselves all the time where they're like, JJ's not allowed to run. It's open if he runs. And then in the game on Saturday, he ran. And he spun and took a hit like to the ribs, and he was like a little bit slow to get up. That was the last play he played. Harbaugh's like, hell no. And I was wondering, like, did he tell him don't run and he ran anyway? Because they did give like an interview. I don't know if it was last week or the week before, and it was like Harbaugh told Jay, like during the Nebraska game, there was a play where Harbaugh's yelling, like, run, run, you're supposed to run. And he said that it was almost like slow-mo where JJ like made eye contact with him during the play. And then he stopped and threw a touchdown like 30 yards downfield instead. And Harbaugh's like, I had to tell him like, oh, great play, great play. Much better than running. Like, and I wonder like, if he's telling him like to run on certain plays, he's telling him like, I know that there's been certain games where he's like, you're just handing off and we're just going to fake this. And they say they're setting it up for games later in the year and they never do it. That's all I was curious on your opinion. Like, because I hear people say, like, oh, don't worry. JJ's setting it up. It's wide open right now. He's not going to pull it and he's not going to run because coach is telling him not to. And it was pure like Indiana. They were focused on the running back. No one was staying with JJ. And then when he did run it a couple times, it was open. And I was thinking, like, coach is going to be so pissed at him for running the ball. Like, why are you doing that? He got hit like three times. They said that he's only been hit three times all year and he got hit three times against Indiana. Or something crazy like that, they said. Maybe it was sacks. But he hasn't been hit a lot, and I must have wondered, like, just hand off. You don't need to be running. Maybe, I mean, you guys are killing Syracuse. Does he need to run? I would say no.
I would say no, but I do know this. Like, if in the world of read option and spread option type football, it's not something that you can just draw in the dirt on Monday and be like, well, we're going to do this week. Like, it's a concept that whether it's like zone read where you're pulling and running, or the gap scheme where they're like pulling linemen and you're reading off the either type of scheme, it's not something that you can go into the game of the week and be like, well, I guess we're going to try to read off of that. Like, you're asking your quarterback to just get maimed. Like, that has to be something that you is within your scheme that you're consistently doing and practicing and reading. And like in years past with some of my teams, I've said, you know, on this particular play, we're repping this. If you see the corner playing more than 8 yards away, you're pulling and throwing. And we would just drill it where if he didn't throw it, he was getting his butt chewed. It was like, why are you not taking the easy money?
That's,
and, I mean, you drill it to a point that then they know what the expectation is and you're able to execute it.
Well, sometimes the players just have to play. That's like watching USC. I feel like they're letting them play a little too much. Like, there were a couple times where I was like, they can get back in this if Caleb Williams just stops forcing everything. Or, like, trying to make a bunch more. Like, just take what they're giving you. Like, did you not rewatch, like, the game film against Ohio State? Like, Ohio State barely scored. And they're able to win because they took what Notre Dame gave them and kept the game close till the end. USC is like, nah, we're going to force it and have a bunch of turnovers. And then when we start to come back, we're going to let him return the kickoff for a touchdown. Really put us behind. It's like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Now USC, like, there's no way. They're going to come into the Big Ten. And if they're going to struggle with Riley as their coach against Notre Dame, look out, because half the Big Ten is like that offense, right? Or that defense. Watching them get frustrated against like Iowa, forcing interceptions the entire game, and then they're like, how do we lose 12-7? It's like, yeah, that's how. Oh man. So the I know we were recording this early. The NFL, man, the Niners go down. They lose to the Browns. I'm like, but my man Jake Moody missed two field goals. That's a bad look for a Michigan guy coming in. Someone told me that C.J. Stroud looks like the best rookie quarterback this year, but that can't be right, because when he listened to the Southbound Sports, he found out that all Ohio State quarterbacks were busts, right? And I take full responsibility, man.
The season is young.
Yeah, you say that now, but we heard the same thing about Fields, right? Fields got injured, I think, today. So hopefully he's all right. But it's still early, and he hasn't done anything yet. There are a lot of quarterbacks that were regular season heroes for a while that disappeared and people don't remember. Like, it's always funny when like the commentators bring up like a quarterback from the 80s and I'm like, I know who he is, but I bet most people at home have no idea what they're talking about, right? Because if it's not like the Dan Marinos that are still in commercials, like, you don't know them. Like, what's the one they always bring up? Dan Fouts? Like, no one knows who the hell Dan Fouts is. Are you talking? You kidding me? Like, the one guy they interviewed, I don't know if you saw this game a couple weeks ago, is the Giants are out right now, but the Giants played a couple weeks ago, and they were, like, talking about to some, like, young Giants player, and he's like, I tried to compare you to Lawrence Taylor, and the kid had no idea who Lawrence Taylor was, and I was laughing so hard, because they tried to, like, save the interview, and I didn't know who the kid was either. So joke's on me, right? Like, I know who Lawrence Taylor is, but I don't know who the new guy is. And I was like, he's like, yeah, I thought like for the Giants, you'd be like Lawrence Taylor. The kid's like, who the hell's Lawrence Taylor? And I'm like, that's how old these announcers are, that all their references are from like the 80s and 90s. And they're trying to relate to these kids and they have no idea who these guys are. Like, Lawrence Taylor's not around the game anymore, right? He's not in any commercials. I never see him. I see, what's the guy, was it George Rogers that won the Heisman for, like, South Carolina? I think he was in one of the latest Heisman House TikTok commercials. And I was like, who the hell would even know who that was? I think that's who it is. I could be 100% wrong. Someone's probably laughing because that's not the name of the guy.
I was like, I know exactly which one you're talking about, because I thought the same thing. Was like, When did South Carolina have somebody?
I'm pretty sure it was the 80s, and I think it was George Rogers, because I used to live kind of close, and I knew a lot of people that went there. And he's with Barry Sanders, because it's like all running backs. It was like three running backs from the 80s. Yeah. So George Rogers won South Carolina's first Heisman after leading the nation in rushing and won the 1980 Heisman. So, like, such a deep cut that they're like, you know what? We're bringing him in. We're bringing him in to do a Heisman House commercial. It's like, I don't know who else was there with Barry Sanders. I only remember Barry because then Tim Tebow's tightening the lids or whatever. They're doing a TikTok. I don't know what the hell that commercial is about. But because then even Wendy's makes fun of Matt Leinart with the Caleb Williams. They're like, who are you? And he's like, Matt Leinart, I won a national championship. He's like, I don't know you. That's like what it is for a lot of the kids, I think, watching the TV when they bring up like these old players. They have no idea who these old players are. Like, I don't know any players from the 70s. I thought Thurman Thomas and O.J. Simpson played together. Right? Like, for the longest time, I just assumed, because like, when am I looking up Bills rosters, right? I just assumed based on the time frame of the Bronco chase. And
although, speaking of Thurman Thomas, that always amazes me that Thurman Thomas and Barry Sanders were in the same backfield at Oklahoma State.
I know. People don't know that. I do know that one, because I know a lot about Barry Sanders. I like Barry Sanders a lot. Just like I know a lot about Bo Jackson. But anyone pre that date, when Barry Sanders played like in the late 80s, anyone before that, I probably don't know. I know, like, obviously Jim Harbaugh and then some of the other guys from the 80s, like Chuck Long at Iowa. He beat Harbaugh's team to keep Michigan out of the chance for a natty in like 85 or something. But, oh man, watching the NFL, it's like at the point where, other than the Chiefs, like, the 49ers looked like they're the best team in the NFC, and then they crapped the bed. The Eagles looked bad. Did they end up losing that game? I had it on when we started the show, and I forgot. It was over before I looked back up. The Jets took a lead after an interception.
And then they scored.
The Jets scored, yeah. But did the Eagles win?
I'm going to say a big negative.
Because they had the ball. I'm going to look it up so they don't sound like idiots. But they did get the ball back, and it was one of those things where it was like the Jets scored too fast. And sometimes I wonder if they just like...
Yeah, Jets won 20-14.
Yeah, because they would have needed a touchdown. But I was just worried that they scored too fast, and then the Eagles were going to have a chance to go back. But that's where I'm just... out of my mind. The other thing was, didn't the 49ers have some injuries? Yeah, they lost McCaffrey, right. Dude. That's what I wanted to bring up. I had to scroll through my notes. So they lose Debo Samuel and McCaffrey, which is crazy because McCaffrey never gets hurt for the Niners. Funny how that is. His is just a rib designation.
The going got tough, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to take a break.
He had a rib injury. So Debo Samuel's was a shoulder injury, but did they really need to finish a game against the Browns? Like, if you're going to throw a bone to a team and give them a win, I think the Browns is a safe bet, right? Because if you saw them in the Super Bowl, you'd be like, hey, I'm glad we're playing you guys. Right? I don't know why you're laughing. That's a legit thing, right? Because it would be like, if Michigan was playing like Louisville in the playoffs, I would say, thank God. Right? Because not like I would have said that for TCU last year, but I knew TCU was like an upperclassman mess when their guys are like 28 years old. And I was like, this is going to be a weird game because their guys are 100 years old. Guess what? They all retire or they all graduate. And then this year, TCU is like back down to earth. Where this year, the roster seem to have settled in, where I'm not watching the game and they're like, here he is. He has a mortgage. He has a wife, and here's his two kids. They're ages 7 and 5. And he's 26. I'm like, what the hell? Get him out of here. Why is he still playing? He's been playing for 8 years. I think there are a couple of like guys that have been playing for 8 years still, but it seems to like have slowed down where your team's not built around that, right? I did want to bring up the coincidence thing. Remember how the Braves won the World Series 2 years ago? They won the World Series in 1995. And I've been telling you that history is going to repeat itself, because then the Avs won the Stanley Cup. And this year, Matt, I was watching the Florida State, or no, I was watching the UNC game, and they brought up a stat that both UNC and Florida State haven't been undefeated together since 1997. You know who won the Natty in 1997? Michigan. So that's not a coincidence. And they also said that it was the first time Michigan's defense has scored, like, only given up like 7 or less points since 1997. And I thought, quit throwing that number around, guys. You're really spooking me. Like, come on, don't do that to me. Because you're only one injury away, right? I know you're playing 100 guys every week. But the 97, that's a good year. Florida State come in. Because, like, if I'm being honest, like, if Michigan had a pick, knowing nothing about the game, if you were like, hey, Michigan's going to play an ACC team, who would you want to win it between UNC and Florida State? Like, 100% UNC. Like, why even risk it with a team like Florida State that you know has comparable talent? Like, I think at any point you want to take the team with the talent gap. Like, if you had a do-over last year where, like, Michigan could have played a rematch with Ohio State or TCU again, 100% TCU. Like, Michigan took 2 pick sixes and a fumble at the goal line to lose that game. Those are freak turnovers. So 100% I'd want to play TCU again. That's like the NFL. Like, I was joking about, like, the Browns. I guarantee the Niners are going to play the Browns again compared to, like, the Eagles or someone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Eagles are in their division. But, like, if they were like, hey, who would you want to play in the Super Bowl, the Chiefs or the Browns? They're like, oh, Browns 100 times. We don't want to play the team that has been winning it, right? Give me a break. I don't even care if it's, like, the easiest football playoff of all time. I don't care if Tennessee makes it. If it's, like, Tennessee, UNC, Michigan, and, like, who else could they throw in there that's, like, someone that's crazily in there? A Pac-12 school. Oh, or the Big 12. They don't even have any Big 12 schools left, right? I don't really want to play Oklahoma. I don't play Texas either.
Not with how they're playing right now.
Liberty. Play Liberty.
That would be a dangerous school.
They still undefeated? Yeah, but the talent gap has to be there. Actually, you'd only have to play 2 of them. So Michigan could play Tennessee and UNC. I would think that'd be a good slate of playoff teams if that's, like, who they drew. Because, like, looking at the rankings right now, it looks like the Penn State-Ohio State game, unless it's a complete blowout where Ohio State kills Penn State, I don't think Penn State's going to drop out of the top 10. Because there's not that many undefeated teams left. You have Air Force, Liberty, James Madison, right? I think those are the 3 that we had last week. Maybe Fresno State, or did Fresno State end up losing? And then North Carolina, they're 10. Penn State, Oklahoma, Washington, Florida State, Ohio State, Michigan, and Georgia. I didn't even look at the polls. I didn't see that Washington had 2 first place votes. But I'm not surprised. Votes are very spread out this year. It's Georgia, then a gap, then Michigan. And then in the coaches poll, Matt, Michigan got 4 first place votes now. Florida State lost their first place vote. I don't know how. I think they had one in the coaches poll, didn't they?
They've had one. Like,
I'm going back and looking.
For the most part, they've been the second most vote getting team other than Georgia.
It's flipped now. Michigan's getting, I'm trying to look. Florida State didn't have one. I thought they had one coaching. They still have their AP one. But Michigan has 16 in the AP and 4 in the coaches pool. The only other team other than Georgia in the coaches pool is Ohio State and Oklahoma. Which, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if that's how it shakes out. And that's the playoff again, where it's like Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. It's like, all right, awesome. 4 power schools, just what you wanted, right? Right, guys? Like, they're begging Florida to upset Florida State or something. They're like, give them a loss so we can drop them behind Oklahoma. It's like, that's what we want. Washington, the same thing. Unfortunately, I've been saying, I think I said at the beginning of the show, I don't think Washington's going to make it through the Pac-12 undefeated, just because you're going to have to replay Oregon and you're only halfway done. Like, I joked about bowl eligibility, but Michigan and Georgia are both 7-0. So they're over halfway done with the season. And they're murdering teams. I mean, Georgia's not as bad as what Michigan's been murdering them. But, like, they're both killing them by, like, at least 10 points every game, I think. So, like, all right, awesome. Doesn't matter who you play if you're having your third stringers in the third quarter. Like, USC was looking bad. Washington still has to play. USC, though, at USC, Utah, and Oregon State. Then they have to play a rematch with most likely Oregon, right? Maybe Utah. If they have to replay Utah, though, that means they lost to them already, I would think. So, like, for them to get through, it's not as cut and dry as the Big Ten, where Michigan could easily lose to Penn State and then lose the ender to Ohio State and end up 9-2 or whatever that would be, 10-2. Like, that wouldn't surprise me. They have to get through Michigan State. If they go on the road again and beat Michigan State, I think the only other road game, I'm going to look it up real quick. Because, like, if you're comparing the top schedules, we know what the road blocks are for Michigan. For Georgia, it's going to be the Tennessee team again. Now, I think they have a little bit easier of a schedule, Georgia does, just because they don't play any of the top teams. That's what I was saying. Michigan's schedule looks weak, but at the end of the year, if Penn State and Ohio State are still in the top 10, you potentially have two top 10 matchups that you either lost one and won one, or you won them both and you're in the playoffs as a lock. Like, Georgia plays Florida after a bye, then Missouri, Ole Miss, and Tennessee before Georgia Tech, of course, which should be a cakewalk because they lost to that Bowling Green team. Now, Georgia, their schedule, the only ranked teams that they're going to play are either going to be in the teens or below. At the end of the year, I have a hard time believing that any of the teams on their schedule are going to be near the top 10. Unless Tennessee does the unthinkable and wins out. Right? Because they already have one loss. And they play Bama this week. So if they lose to Bama, you think that they're going to drop all the way to the 20s or out of the pool. And then Missouri, too. Missouri 6-1. In 2 or 3 weeks, they could easily lose a couple of games. And so you're looking at, I don't think Georgia's going to lose a game. I honestly think Tennessee's the only game. I don't trust Ole Miss. They get Ole Miss at home, I think they smoke them. The only reason I'm worried about Tennessee is because it's on the road. Georgia has played teams close like Auburn on the road already and Vanderbilt on the road. They haven't really opened it up. But are you kidding me? They only have 4 away games? That's insane. They play Kentucky away, or no, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, and Georgia Tech away. Get out of here. How many is Michigan have? Let me count real quick. Make sure we have 5. Yeah, we have 5. Damn, Georgia. Why are you doing that? Michigan plays at Michigan State this week. That's always a head scratcher for me. Then they get Purdue at home, Penn State on the road, and Maryland on the road before Ohio State at home. So they have 3 more away games. The Penn State one's the big one. But can you lose a game and still be in it is the question. A 3-way tie would be weird. If there's 3 1-loss Big Ten teams and let's say ACC or the SEC's in, and then Florida State stays undefeated. What do they do? Like, who do they put in? Whoever the champ is? I guess it depends on the scores, too, right?
I mean, that's the part right now. It's hard to speculate with so many games.
Because Oklahoma could win out. If Oklahoma, Florida State, and Washington and Georgia run the table, I think the Big Ten gets left out then. Which it would be better than Ohio State making it, let's be real. If it can't be Michigan, then we don't want Ohio State in, even if they back in. Penn State, they've never made it to the playoffs. I feel like they're playing just for the expanded playoffs. Does that make sense? Like, it's almost like Franklin knows that if he is just close by scheduling these cupcakes, and they, like, you know, they always say, like, if you're feeling guilty, you're going to throw shade on someone else. That's almost what it felt like when Penn State was like, you're playing UMass this week. And he's like, yeah, but Michigan, like, they're buying teams out to not to play easy schedules like this. We're not buying them out. We're just scheduling them on purpose. Like, we didn't have to buy anybody out, right? That's almost like what it makes sense. Like, I'm translating for him. So that's my last thought for the show. It's like, if you're casting stones, maybe you're feeling a little guilty about yourself. I don't know if I had anything else. I think I talked about anything. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
The only other thing I wanted to bring up is just giving a shout out to my brother's team that they had their playoff game and ended up losing, unfortunately. But regular season went undefeated and then still had to run two rematch games to be the outright champions. But good season all around. Nice. We're moving on to the off season.
Yeah, it's getting about that time because high school is going to be wrapping up soon too, right? I guess they have until the end of the month.
We have two more weeks and our regular season's done. And then we got to see how we do because we're in a position that if we can win some varsity games, we're still technically in the running for playoffs right now, but that window can close fast if we don't win this week.
Well, good luck going forward, dude. You have to keep us up to date. I don't have anything else for the show. I think I just had the undefeated teams written down, which I already went through. Fresno State's not undefeated, I don't think. So it's only Air Force, Liberty, and James Madison that could play spoiler. But they're not even ranked at this point, which is kind of insane. When does the first College Bowl ranking comes out next week, right?
I believe so.
So Michigan needs to make a statement against Michigan State, and maybe we can be number one, baby. Number one in everyone's heart, right? Yeah, although if Ohio State kills Penn State, I bet Ohio State's number one, right? Damn. I spoke it into existence. That's probably what's going to happen. All right, you have anything for the final bell?
Nope, that's right.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe. Like I said, the Google stuff has been like changing. I might make some changes to the site and stuff, some updates in the coming weeks or month. It depends if I have some free time. But we'll keep you posted on that. If there's anything you want to see, let us know, and we'll see you next week.